It's Thursday, the 9th of October. In today's BizNews briefing, we bring you Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi's latest testimony. Speak to Richard Stewart, the new CEO of Sibanye-Stillwater, who attended the Joburg Indaba on mining and investment. NVIDIA and Musk tie up, and Cristiano Ronaldo becomes the first football billionaire. Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi is facing tough questions from the ad hoc committee in Parliament. Yesterday, he was pressed to reveal the identities of the so-called Big Five, allegedly running drug cartels and influencing key institutions in the country. Mkhwanazi only named two well-known arrested suspects, Vusimuzi Kat Matlala and Katiso Molefe, as they've already appeared in court. Mkhwanazi held back, refusing to name the other three as they have not yet been arrested and appeared in court. He did say, however, that the other three are well-known tenderpreneurs.
The only names that we are making it visible here are the two names.
Okay.
And that's a name of a Vusimuzi Matlala, who is known as Kat, as well as Katiso Molefe. Both individuals have been to court, and I think you are privy to the court processes related to their cases. We have the other three that we did not reflect here. They are known. Their names are known. I must say, Honorable Chair and members, these are tenderpreneurs. These are the people that the government has been awarding tenders to. They are quite big financially. They are part of this whole lot. We did not put their names because we did not want to implicate people before they appear before court, except the others. The place that we feel comfortable to talk about it, we name the names. And the others that we're not comfortable with, we did not put the names.
Richard Stewart is the newly appointed CEO of Sibanye-Stillwater, one of South Africa's most influential mining and metals processing companies. Richard steps into this role at a pivotal moment for the industry, following the retirement of Neil Froneman after a transformative 12-year tenure. At the recent Joburg Indaba, Richard shared bold insights on the future of platinum group metals, South Africa's role in global supply chains, and the strategic importance of beneficiation.
Sort of listening to the Indaba overall, I think a lot of the themes are really about the opportunity that the country has in the, clearly it's a very volatile time globally at the moment, the macros. But I think a clear recognition that there's some real opportunity for the country. You know, I think we've seen the scramble for critical metals in particular around the world. You know, we've seen many Western regions trying to secure critical metals across the globe and including on the continent. And I think a lot of the discussions revolving around the significant opportunity that South Africa has. But the fact that we've really missed that opportunity over the last 20 years and what we need to do to make sure we capitalize on this one, which is very much around combined stakeholders from industry and government in particular.
One of the key focus areas has been discussions around the uncertainty related to the regulatory environment in South Africa. Is that the biggest challenge that we're facing right now as an industry?
Well, I think we're facing, I think we're facing several big challenges, but what I would argue or suggest, and I think that's been a theme in the discussions, is that that's probably one of the challenges that's easiest fixed. You know, I think it takes political will. It obviously takes an understanding. And I think the discussions that have been had is, you know, we really, I think often as a country, try and complicate things with these regulations and policies and try to solve for multiple different aspects. You know, what we really need to do is simplify it, understand what our core objectives and purpose is, which I think as a country, I would argue is really around economic growth to address poverty, and really simplify these to get them moving. So I think there are a number of challenges. You know, the normals always come up in discussions, such as infrastructure challenges, etc. But there's work on those. We understand what needs to be done. But policy and regulatory certainty is something that can be addressed quickly with the right political will.
Is the political will there? I believe Gwede Mantashe was in attendance.
Yeah, I think I didn't actually see him yesterday, but I believe he will be in attendance today. You know, I think this is precisely a lot of the discussions that are going on around some of the policies which we have found disappointing that have come out in regulation, such as the new MPRDA bill. You know, I think certainly in the way that it was released in its original form was something that was not investor friendly. You know, that's not the type of regulation that's going to attract foreign capital, which we so desperately need, not only as a mining industry, but as a country as a whole. You know, so I think we've been intensively engaging, and hopefully that comes through. But I think there's still a lot of engagement needed to move forward, and I think a lot of alignment on common purpose.
Biz News founder Alec Haag is also on the ground at the Joburg Indaba. Let's get his perspective on the discussions underway.
Well, the sun is shining here in Sandton at the Inanda Club, where we have the Joburg Mining Indaba, and it's pretty appropriate. The messages that have been coming through in the last day and a half have been very supportive of a mining sector that's been out of the limelight for a long time, even though it produces about half of the export earnings that South Africa gets. We should never forget that. It employs nearly 500,000 people, and that is an industry that's been under siege from government regulations for 20 years now. But it looks like the tide is turning. Certainly there is cautious optimism amongst the different chief executives, and just about everybody who's anyone is here. Many of the chief executives of the major gold, platinum and coal mines have been talking to us. We also had the CEO of Kumba as well, giving us some insights. It's been a good message, but the message is, come on government, there's lots of money waiting to be invested, not our money, because we as miners don't have it, but international investors want to invest in mining again. There has been a sea change in the world. No longer is mining just to be forgotten about. It's an industry that everybody is now finally realizing we can't do without, including coal. Just give us the policy certainty in South Africa, and that 20 billion rand per new mine will come flooding into the country with lots more jobs and a lot stronger wealth effect in this country. I've enjoyed the past day or so, or couple of days here at the Mining Indaba, and I can tell you that the message that's coming through is one of cautious optimism, and one that we should be grateful for in a time when our country is looking for all the bright sunshine that it can get.
Cody from Paul has sold multiple vehicles to WeBuy Cars. Suspicious?
I think so.
Is that a crime?
No. Where are you getting the cars?
I buy them and I sell them at the spot like a normal person.
Okay.
No, man, I'm just an accounting student. I know a good deal when I see one.
That's Excel meant. What's more stressful, tax season or selling a car at WeBuy Cars?
Tax season, obviously.
WeBuy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
NVIDIA is to invest in Elon Musk's artificial intelligence startup, xAI. xAI is raising more financing than initially planned, tapping backers, including NVIDIA, to lift its ongoing funding to around $20 billion. That's according to people familiar with the matter. NVIDIA is investing as much as $2 billion in the equity portion of the transaction. Bloomberg's Annabelle Droulas reports.
So another day, another deal that this time NVIDIA seems to be inking with xAI. What do we know, according to our own reporting? This obviously is a Bloomberg scoop.
Yeah, it's a Bloomberg scoop, and it's been very well read today as well. So it tells you there's a lot of interest. Again, to your point, we've just seen deal after deal after deal being struck in the AI infrastructure space in particular. But what we've got from sources here is that, so xAI, we knew they were looking to do some fundraising, but what we reported at the end of September was that they were looking at $10 billion at a $200 billion valuation. Now we've actually heard that they've upped the stakes to raise $20 billion instead. So you're talking about a doubling in the space of just a couple of weeks. And as you said, NVIDIA, we're hearing, could be one of the ones that's getting involved here. Sources are telling us that they're looking to take an equity investment or make an equity investment worth as much as $2 billion. So yes, it is a major capital raise for the company. and also raising that concern yet again, and it is the subject of our big take today, but essentially talking about how you're seeing sort of a circularity in a lot of these deals, because when NVIDIA makes these investments, these companies are in turn buying NVIDIA chips. So it's that question is this sort of leading into this AI bubble, or is the hype actually real?
Staying with AI, JP Morgan Chase Chair and CEO Jamie Dimon says his company spends $2 billion a year on developing artificial intelligence technology and saves about the same amount annually from the investment. He spoke to Tom McKenzie on Bloomberg Tech.
We've been doing AI since 2012, so people think it's like a new thing. Gen AI is kind of new, but not all of AI. We have 2,000 people doing it, spend $2 billion a year on it. It affects everything, risk, fraud, marketing, idea generation, customer service, and it's kind of the tip of the iceberg. And so, you know, we're deploying it. Every time we meet as a business, we ask, what are you doing in AI? What are you doing to serve your people? Why can you do better? What is somebody else doing? So we're freely deploying it and safely. We, you know, have a lot of rules and regulations in place for our own data and how we use it, et cetera.
Is it having a material impact on revenues for JP Morgan? If not now, then when?
So we have shown that for $2 billion of expense, we have about $2 billion of benefit. Some we actually can do real detail. We did this, we reduced headcount, we saved this time and money, we reduced errors. Some you can't. It's just improved service, something like that. It's like almost worthwhile, worthless to say what's the NPV, but we know about $2 billion of actual cost saves. And like I said, I think it's the tip of the iceberg. We're getting better and better at it. We know how to do it. As the managers learn how to do it, they're asking more questions. Why can't it do X and why can't it do Y? And then I don't have my phone here, but we have a suite, an LLM suite, yeah, on internal data to do research and summarize reports and, you know, scan contracts and do things like that. 150,000 people a week use it. So it's quite productive.
More and more of your employees are using the agentic AI.
Our own LLM, and agentic is just starting. Mm. You know, but that will be deployed over time too. But it's also being used for coding. I mean, it's being used quite broadly now. And like I said, part of it is getting your mind working around how you're going to use this thing. And so our managers and leaders have to do it.
If you look out 5 years, are there more jobs in banking as a result of AI or fewer?
I think people shouldn't put their head in the sand. It is going to affect jobs. So think of every application, every service you do, well, you'll be using AI, some to enhance it, some of it'll be you doing the same job, you're doing a better job at it. There will be jobs that it eliminates. But you're better off being way ahead of the curve and retraining people. So we retrain and redeploy a lot of people. So for JP Morgan, if we're successful, we'll have more jobs. But there'll probably be less jobs in certain functions.
Cristiano Ronaldo has become the first football billionaire. His net worth has now climbed to $1.4 billion. That's according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. During more than two decades at some of Europe's biggest clubs, including Real Madrid, Manchester United, and Juventus, the 40-year-old Portuguese national cashed in on his stardom with lucrative side gigs for the likes of Armani and Nike. But it's now in the twilight of his playing career that he's been catapulted to the top ranks of the richest sports people, inking a fresh contract extension in June with Saudi Arabian team Al Nassr that's reportedly worth more than $400 million. Bloomberg has the details.
Cristiano Ronaldo has become the football world's first billionaire. First billionaire player. In the twilight of his playing career, the 40-year-old has been catapulted into the top ranks of the richest sports people, inking a fresh contract extension in June with Saudi Arabian team Al Nassr that is reportedly worth more than $400 million. Joining me now is our Portugal bureau chief, Sofia Horta e Costa. Sofia, great to talk to you about Ronaldo and this incredible wealth. How has he done it?
So what's really unusual about this, Tom, is that actually the bulk of his wealth comes from salary and also mostly from the Saudi move. So it was a really lucrative move for him. Let's not forget that obviously in Saudi Arabia, there's no income tax. So he's benefited from that significantly. But a net worth of $1.4 billion. Now, most of the billionaire athletes that the Bloomberg Billionaire Index tracks, like Roger Federer, the majority of that comes from sponsorships or ownerships in other companies. But Ronaldo is purely from being on the field, which is very unique among athletes.
And I'm assuming, Sophia, he's not keeping all this money in the bank. Is he investing it? Do we know how active he is as an investor?
So we do know it's quite sporadic, actually. He tends to invest a lot in Portugal, which is why we're looking at this. You know, he's bought a local, very well-known local ceramics company. He likes paddles, so he bought a paddle court chain here in Portugal as well. He's invested in hotel chains, one that's based in his home island of Madeira. But he doesn't really have a kind of formal investing structure quite yet. He does work very closely with a very select group of people. He doesn't trust a lot of people. And one of them is a wealth manager based here in Lisbon, actually just up the road from where I am right now. He declined to comment for the story, but the thinking is there could be more formal structure going forward. Now, if you ask Ronaldo what his life will be after football, he doesn't like that question because he always says, I am still playing, I am still a footballer, I'm not retired. But he has said that he wants to own maybe one or several football clubs, following in the footsteps of, you know, David Beckham and others who have gone down that path. And also Brazilian Ronaldo, let's not forget the original Ronaldo, also owns a club in Spain.
That's it for this edition of the Biz News Briefing. We'll be back on Monday with more context on the global and local front. Thanks as always for joining us.